What you've said tonight is an encouraging thing. And so often, as I go through the Old Testament, I notice that when there's something positive, God gives a negative. For example, if you go to the book of Deuteronomy, it talks about the blessings. I think there's 15 verses of blessings. And then 50-some are curses. And I notice this time and again that when God gives something, he says, now watch out about this. It's like Larry was even saying, you know, when you go into the land, but watch out. Make sure that you do such and such. And so even as we've heard encouraging things tonight, encouraging, I want to challenge us not to be like there are two instances in the Old Testament, sources of discouragement. Do you know you can discourage other people in this congregation? I would just like, let's just say this is our Bible class, I would like for you to tell me, what can people do to discourage others in a church? Rick?
Complain.
Complain, murmur. Alex?
Not show up.
Not show up. Kathy?
Not do your part.
Not do your part. Leave it to somebody else. Assume somebody else is going to do something. Carol?
Be insensitive to hurting people around.
There's a lot of hurt here. In every life, there's hurt. Sometimes it's easy not to be sensitive to it. My wife is usually good about that. When I'm at a restaurant and somebody's not serving us, so I'm like, rrr. And she said, you know, you don't know what's happening in that person's life. Ron?
Trying to help people in the wrong way, where it actually hurts and doesn't help.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes people seek to help to make themselves look good rather than to really help. Anna? Yeah. Easily offended. You go to our covenant and our church covenant, go pick up a constitution, the very first page says, not easily offended. Why? Because that is so typical. That is so easy to be done, is to be easily offended. Two sources of discouragement for the Christian, and if I were to title this, I would entitle this Big Start, Small Finish, Big Talk, Little Walk. Big Start, Small Finish is discouraging to others. Big Talk, Little Walk is discouraging to others. And there are two instances in the book of Numbers. We've just read about these. And I'd like you to go to Numbers chapter 12 to start with two sources of discouragement for the Christian. And here are some examples we do not want to emulate. So the first one is Big Start, Small Finish. Big Start, Small Finish. When I played football, that is when I went out for the football team in high school, we would have sprints at the end of every practice. The coach would make us sprint. Here we had been practicing the whole time. We were wore out. I knew the sprints were coming, so I would reserve my energy for the sprints because I wanted to impress the coach. But I didn't really do a lot of work during the practices as far as the other guys are concerned. Well, that's not entirely true. Many times the coach would have me out there like Rudy in that, what's that movie called where Rudy, the football player, I would be the beat-up guy. They'd put me out there for somebody to punch. And so there were times I came out pretty bloodied. But there were times, too, when I'd get to the end of football practice and I'd get this second wind. And the coach would say, okay, guys, line up. And we knew what was happening. And he'd make us run sprints. And he would keep going on the sprints. You know what I would do? I would just tear out. And here I am outrunning the halfback, the fullback, the core. I'm outrunning everybody. I'm thinking, man, I'm impressing the coach. But by the time the sprints are done, I'm not doing so well. Big start, small finish. And the coach wasn't impressed. Folks, it's not just how you start, it's how you finish. Showy start, shameful finish. Big start, small finish. Say it however you want to. But it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Somebody can get saved and they can have this all excited for the Lord, and that's wonderful. But it's not just how you start, it's how you finish. Here in Numbers chapter 12, this chapter is somewhat overshadowed by the more well-known Numbers 13 and 14. Because what happens in Numbers 13 and 14? They go to spy out the land. That's the chapter we remember. So Numbers chapter 12, we kind of gloss over to get to chapters 13 and 14. Because in chapters 13 and 14, there are men who are murmuring. Somebody mentioned murmuring as discouragement tonight. Murmuring against what? Look at chapter 14 and verse 2. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. I tell you, I don't know how Moses did it. I really don't. I mean, having a small group of people as opposed to 2.2 to 3 million people. Can you imagine 2 to 3 million people murmuring? I don't know how he did it. But there are men who are murmuring against Moses' authority. In chapter 12, they're not murmuring against Moses. They're bucking his authority. And it's not just this whole nation who's bucking his authority. It's two of his closest. His sister and his brother are bucking his authority. And the one who's the real instigator, who seems to be the real instigator, is his sister. Somebody who really started out well. She's not mentioned in the book of Exodus by name, but she's mentioned. You see, it's in the book of Exodus where Moses' mother could not hide him any longer, so she made this little ark and put him in the river and among the bulrushes, and it was his sister who stood there to see what would happen. And when the daughter of Pharaoh found this little ark and discovered this little Hebrew child, she is the one who took the initiative and said, "Would you like me to find a Hebrew mother to nurse him for you?" Somebody who really went out there with some great initiative and did something that was really instrumental, humanly speaking, in the life of her brother Moses. She started out well. Then you get to Exodus chapter 15, and they've just come through the Red Sea, and they begin to sing this song. And it's a great song. You read about it in Exodus chapter 15. And in this song, it says, Miriam the prophetess leads in joyful singing. Miriam the prophetess. That's the first time her name appears. She's not named in Exodus 2 as the sister, but now she's named. You know when the third mention of Miriam is? It's right here in Numbers chapter 12. And here's what it says in verse 1. And Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses. Miriam and Aaron speak against Moses. By the way, be careful when someone gossips about spiritual authorities. Paul warns in 1 Timothy 5:19, against an elder receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses. And I look at this and I go through this chapter and I note this mentally. Spiritual leaders can take heart, because when you have a man like Moses who's being shot at, it happens quite a bit. Because it says this in verse 3, now the man Moses was very meek above all the men who were upon the face of the earth. And if men will speak out against a man like that, they'll speak out against anybody. That doesn't give spiritual leaders a pass, but neither does it give people a pass to murmur and complain and to buck authority. They are bucking Moses in this chapter. Let's just read, because we didn't actually finish verse 1. Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman, she's a Cushite, whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. And they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? What do you think? You're the only one? Hath he not spoken also by I'm the sister of, you know, God speaks by me too. Aaron, he's the spokesman for Moses. Has he not also spoken by us? Then verse 3 that we've already read, that he's very meek. Verse 4, and the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam, come out ye three unto the tabernacle of the congregation. And they three came out. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forth. So there's all three. Then when they get there, it's like this. Aaron and Miriam, now you two stand forth. What do you think they're thinking? And he said, hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore then were ye not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And you can read the rest of the chapter, how Moses appeals on behalf of his sister Miriam. It never says that she is healed. It's implied, but it's never said directly. I read this, and she is one of those bucking Moses, and God judges her with leprosy. She, the one who helped the infant Moses, she who led in the singing after the Red Sea. Here you see, folks, that those deeds do not give her a pass for the rest of her life. So it's not just because somebody starts out well that you go, well, for the rest of their life, you know, they did this wonderful deed, and therefore for the rest of their life, they can live off of that one good deed and do something else. All the good that somebody has done can be wiped out in a moment. We remember the promise in the scriptures that if the wicked turns from his way, he will live. But we somehow forget the parallel promise that the righteous man who turns from his righteousness to wickedness will die for it. And there are people, and the Bible says there in Ezekiel chapter 33, the people will say, well, God, your ways aren't equal. And he comes back with this answer, both in chapter 33 of Ezekiel and chapter 18 of Ezekiel. He says, you say my ways aren't equal? It's your ways that aren't equal. Do not call me unequal. You're the ones whose ways are unequal. It's easy to start well, but it's hard to finish well. The one three-word phrase we had on our workday, March 31st, does anybody remember what that one three-word phrase was? Who was here? What was it? Okay, Jaden. She got it. And Brick, some of you got, finish the job. Finish the job. You see, it's easy to start but not finish. It's easy to start but not finish. How many projects do you have that you've started but aren't finished? Alan had help with his. And he needed it. But how many projects do you have like that? Does that bother you when you have a project that you have going but you don't finish it? You know where it doesn't bother people? It's when you get into a larger setting, like in a church setting, where you can start something here and it's not noticed. And you can go, well, nobody's going to notice if I don't finish. This is really especially applicable in a church setting. Because everything's volunteer. Everything's volunteer. You don't finish well if you don't finish the job. Somebody says to themselves, I'll put this here. This is true because I recently noticed this. In fact, we had a meeting with the trustees yesterday trying to figure out, where did this come from? Here it is. It's sitting here. Did you guys put it? No, we didn't put it there. Well, then why is this thing here? Well, we don't know. So here's all we can figure that somebody did. Somebody put it there thinking, somebody else will take care of this. In other words, that person did not, they didn't finish the job. They leave it to somebody else to do. Now, somebody comes along, and then people come, you know who people always ask? Me. What's this doing here? As if I'm omniscient or something. I don't know. Who put it there? And so the job is not finished. And so now it takes it literally takes time now to figure out, what are we going to do with this? We went out to the storage shed. We're trying to, how did this get here? Somebody just kind of puts it there and thinks, I'll get to this some other time. In other words, they didn't, oh boy, come on. They did not finish the job. And so they leave it to somebody else to, you know what that causes, folks? It causes discouragement. Because it becomes overwhelming after a while. Here's this job. Here's this thing. Here's this. What do we do? What do we do with this? What do we do with this? What do we do with this? And I'm just telling you, it's a discouraging thing. Not just to the trustees, but to myself. There's another little three-word phrase that I used to teach my boys that they never learned. Remember what it was, Jesse? I didn't teach you that one. That was your answer. I don't know. Yeah, put it back. Put it back. This is kind of a practical evening here. It is so simple, folks. If you get something out, put it back. Ron, I bet you could say this where you are, where you work. If a guy gets a tool out, put it back where you found it. My dad used to get so upset with us because he had all kinds of tools. And I would think, well, I'll just go borrow this tool. And then I go, where did I get this? I'll just put it here. Don't ever do that. And I learned real quick, you better remember where you got it. Because seriously, it discourages others. Put it back where you found it. So let's just kind of have this little rule right here at our church. You find something somewhere, you pick it up and you use something, what do you do now? You put it back, and if you haven't, you did not finish the job. You did not finish. Folks, it is very, very important. You know, we read in Jesus' parable of the sower, really the parable of the soils. There are those who receive the word with joy. Good start. How did they finish? Not so well. There are those who receive the word among the thorns. How do they start? Really well. How do they finish? They have a big start, but a small finish. It's not them, but those on the good ground, which in an honest and good heart, notice that word honest, in an honest and a good heart, having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience. It's with endurance. Finishing the job, or starting well and finishing well, requires endurance. That's in Luke chapter 8 and verse 15. We have seen people who have started well at Westside Baptist Church. I'm not even talking about little duties like this. I'm talking about spiritually. They start out well. And where are they today? They have finished poorly. They discourage the rest of us. They affect the rest of us. They influence the rest of us. There's a man in the New Testament who was a fellow laborer with the Apostle Paul who started out well. Paul names him. He names this man when he says in the book of Colossians, Luke, the beloved physician, it's not Luke, but then he names this man. And he says, and this man greets you. He's a fellow laborer with the Apostle Paul. In fact, that's what he calls him in the book of Philemon. When he's writing to Philemon, he talks about this man and he says, he also salutes you. And then you read about this man at the end of Paul's life, right before he's ready to die. Paul says this in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 10. For this man has forsaken me, having loved this present world. Here's the thing. This man started out well, but finished poorly. Who is that man?
Demas.
Demas, right at the end of Paul's life, he says, Demas has forsaken me. And the reason given, he loved this present world. In 1 John 2:18, John says, it is the last hour. You might say that that's been the case for the last 1900 years. And in chapter 2 and verse 19 of 1 John, he refers to Christ's deniers. These are not backsliders, but they're apostates like Judas. May we be able to say with the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy 4, 7 and 8, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but to all them also that love his appearing. He was somebody who finished well. It's not just how you start, it's how you finish. Think about the overcomers in Revelation 2 and 3. All seven churches are told to him that overcometh. It's those who finish well. And so what I've talked about here tonight, right here at the church, is just, you know, if you're not faithful in the little things, oh, this is no big deal if I don't put this back. Really? 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 If you don't do this, if you can't do it in a little thing, why should you be trusted to do anything big? It is a big thing. Big start, small finish. That's one of the discouragements for the Christian, Numbers chapter 12. Miriam started out well. She finished poorly. Here's the second one. It's in Numbers chapter 32. In the small amount of time we have left, Numbers chapter 32. Verse 1, now the children of Reuben, this is before they actually go across the Jordan River. The children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle. This is because they have defeated two kings, Sihon and Og. And now they've wiped them out. They're on the other side of the Jordan. They are east of the Jordan. They're going to try to get to the west of the Jordan. But before they cross the Jordan, now they've got this land. And these two tribes go, wow, hey, there's a lot of land right here. And we've got a lot of cattle. And this land is good for cattle. Hey, you know what? Let's just stay here. And so they approach Moses. And it says in verses 4 and 5, describing the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, a land for cattle, thy servants have cattle. Wherefore said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for possession, and bring us not over the Jordan. We're just going to stay here. Now, how do you think that's received? Verse 6, and Moses said unto the children of Gad, unto the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall you sit here? You mean after everything we've been through, we've crossed the Red Sea, we've wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, and now you say you're going to stay here and let the rest of us cross the Jordan, we're going to go to war, we're going to fight, and you're going to sit here? And notice what he says in verse 7, and wherefore, next word please, you are discouraging us. Wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? Why are you doing this? He likened them next to those who 40 years earlier discouraged others due to their own unbelief. Verse 8, thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. They discouraged us. You can read this in Deuteronomy 1:28, where the word discouraged is used. They discouraged the children of Israel. While other goes to war, you want to sit here. Folks, you can discourage others. Not just by what you say, but by what you say and then don't do. And that's really what the rest of the chapter is all about. Because Moses says, you're going to sit here? And they said, no, Don't get us wrong. Now, this is the Unruh version. Don't get us wrong. We will go fight. When it comes time to fight, we're going to fight with you. It's all with the mouth. Now, when somebody says something with the mouth, we will do something. How do you know they're going to do it? You don't. You've got to trust them. Now, as it turns out, did they do what they said? They did. But here, before all this takes place, before this is fulfilled, Moses says, listen, you're discouraging the hearts of your brethren. Now you've said you're going to stay here. You're not going to fight. No, we'll go fight. You will? And then Moses says this verse that we remember quite well. It's verse 23. But if ye will not, next word, if you will not do so, here's what you said. You said you were going to go over with us and you were going to fight. But if you do not do so, behold, you have. Now, here's one application. What Moses is saying here. You said you were going to do something and you didn't do it. And if you don't do it, what have you done? Folks, if you say you're going to do something and you don't do it, what have you done? What have you done? Do you really believe that? I don't think you do in many cases. I've had people tell me so many times, I'm going to do such, and they don't do it. What's that called? It's not just when they tell me that, it's when they tell you that. I'll pay that bill, and they don't do it. What's that called? If you say you're going to do something, you don't do it, what's it called? It's a lie, and it's sin. But that's what we don't think. It's no big deal. I didn't really mean it. You said it. You said it. You said you were going to do such and such, and you did not do it. That is sin. And you know what Moses goes on to say in this very same verse? Be sure your sin will find you out. Be sure your sin will find you out. You can discourage the brethren. How? Big talk, little walk. Big promises, no fulfillment. It's like people talking about the importance of prayer and then don't show up to pray. You're a discourager. You say, I don't need to go. I don't feel like going. You know, sometimes it's not about you, it's about others. And discouraging them. You soon learn to view that person as Jesus said about the Pharisees. Here's what he said about the Pharisees. You see, people define the Pharisees as legalists. Look at how Jesus talks about the Pharisees. He says this, all therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. In other words, what they say for you to do, do it. But do not ye after their works. For they say, and they don't do it. You know what a Pharisee is? Don't talk about legalism to me. I'll tell you what a Pharisee is. A Pharisee is somebody who says they're going to do something and then they don't do it. So if you say you're going to do something, I don't care how big or small it is, if you say it, you better do it. Otherwise, you are a, out loud please, would you please acknowledge that? You're a Pharisee. If you say you're going to do something and you don't do it. In other words, they talk big, but they walk small. What they say is one thing, what they do is another thing. People get really excited when somebody has a great idea. Hey, we'd like to do this. We'd like to do that. We will do such and such. And then they don't do it. What's that called? Discouraging. People will often say, you know what we ought to do? You know what we ought to do? We? It's like the boys' coach used to say, what do you have, a mouse in your pocket? What's this we thing? You know what they really mean? And this is what they really mean when they come to me. You know what you ought to do, Pastor? But they say it in terms that's politically correct. You know what we ought to do? I know what they're saying. Yeah. You want me to do something. You've got this great idea and you want me to implement it. You want me to do the work. I learned years ago that when somebody says, Pastor, I've got an idea, I would say, that's fine as long as you carry it out. You know what? The idea's not so big anymore. Some people say something to me in passing, and you think it's a little thing. Pastor, I plan to do such and such, and then they never do it. Thinking I did not notice. I did. Let me tell you a secret about me. My wife can tell you this. I'm very, very detail-oriented, right, hon? In fact, she calls me a perfectionist, and I am. And that can be a strength, but that can also be a weakness because it drives me crazy when something is not done well and it's not done right. It drives me crazy. So I'm revealing some things about myself to you tonight. People say to be transparent. Okay, here you go. I'm being transparent. I am a perfectionist because I believe when the Bible says, whatsoever your hand findeth to do, do it with all your might, that means do it well. Do it with excellence. So when people say something to me, I know. And if they tell me something that I think that needs to be done around here, and they tell me they're going to do it, and then they don't do it, they think I don't notice. Folks, I'm here to tell you, I noticed. And I don't say anything about it. But you know what? I never trust that person with anything else again. I can't. My trust has been lost. It's hard to trust that person again because they said what they were going to do and then didn't do it. Now, do I ever do the same thing? I'm sure I do. And I think it's something that all of us need to work on. You know, Jesus said, let your communication be yea, yea, and nay, nay. And he goes on to say this, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. When it comes right down to it, when somebody says they're going to do something and they don't do it, they're liars. You said it when I read verse 23. Big talkers, they say one thing. Small walkers, they don't do it. How many big talkers does it take to discourage the rest? 2.5 tribes out of how many tribes? 12 tribes. 2.5. 20% discourage 80%. Do the math. 20%, Moses says, you have the potential to discourage the rest of this nation. I did some factoring because I went back into the book of Numbers and I found out how many were in the tribe of Reuben, how many in the tribe of Gad, and how many in the half tribe of Manasseh. And that comes to a total of 107,580. And according to chapter 26 and verse 651, there are 601,730 of the children of Israel. That's just the men. It comes out to this, 18%. 18%, Moses says, you can discourage the rest of your brothers. When you look at Numbers 32 and verse 23, it's actually about big talkers, little walkers. But if ye will not do so, you have sinned. How many have sinned according to this verse? Will not do what they said they would. Behold, ye have sinned. Furthermore, be sure your sin will find you out. So tonight, in this kind of a just frank little meeting here, are you an encourager or a discourager of the brethren?